This is Ellen Rothman on June 27, 1983, interviewing Rabbi Meir Relis. Could you please tell me where you were born and when?
I was born June 2nd, 1980.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family?
About my family?
About your family. What was your father's occupation?
My father was a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Until 1908. Until the year I was born. After, on account of his sickness, he got a heart condition. He put his job away, and he became a builder.
Mm-hmm.
Not like here in America. A Jew needed to a house, so my father would show him. My father was not learned. All he had was three classes, elementary school. But he was a self-made man.
Yeah.
He knew math, and really, he did well. I remember later, he showed me how he knew geometry. He knew logarithms.
Mm-hmm.
With three elementary classes. He learned by himself.
Yeah.
And he became a builder.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he did to the very end.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
I had one brother, so far as I know, and seven sisters. But they all died when they were young. I don't remember them. I remember only two sisters, and I had a sister who lived in Vienna. She married in 1912 and died in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And there she left two daughters, and they live in here in California.
Okay. What was the economic status of your family before the war?
Before World War II?
Yes, before World War II.
Well, my father made a good living. He worked only summer, because in winter in Poland, there was no building.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he made very well. I don't remember misery or hardship.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we lived very, how would I say, sparingly. Why? Because we had two girls to marry, and it meant dowry.
Yeah.
So my father would always put away my parents.
Did your family belong to a religious organization or to a synagogue?
To a synagogue.
Mm-hmm. Were they assimilated, or did they have a sense of their Jewish identity?
Oh, absolutely. They were Jewish people. What else?
Can you tell me about your schooling?
My schooling? I did not attend grammar school. I started the secular studies when I was 18 years old. Until 18 years, from 4 until 18, I learned only Jewish
mm-hmm.
subjects, like
okay.
Bible, very little, but lots of Talmud, and of course the Jewish code.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any Jewish, did you have non-Jewish playmates?
Not until I left my town.
Mm-hmm.
Not playmates. In 1926, I left for Lvov, which is Leopoli, and there, of course, I had non-Jewish friends.
Friends, yeah. Can you describe the life of Jews in your particular town before the war?
No. I have been asking myself, how could we survive? How could we live? A town where you had no water, the water you had to buy.
Mm-hmm.
We had no sewers, and people would throw out everything on the street, and of course our police would wait for them
yeah.
to to give them a fine.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we lived very, very badly. Not that we had, we were hungry, we were not hungry, but I remember, for example, from 1918 to 1924, bread was a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
When mother made bread for 2 or 3 weeks, she would say, don't be a fresser, don't be a glutton, slowly.
But that was not because you were Jewish, that was just the general condition.
No, great misery, because after 1918, we had a civil war
mm-hmm.
between Poland, the Polish people, and the Ukrainians.
Yeah.
And we had there, we had the war, the battlefields, we had a few pogroms, not in our town, but in the surroundings,
mm-hmm.
because we lived not far from the Russian border, the Petlurovtsis, which the Ukrainians, they made a few pogroms, Proskurov, and other cities I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Was there a large population of Jews in your town?
About 1,700. This is what my father wrote to me in 1940. It was a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because before World War I, there was smuggling. For example, people would bring tobacco from Russia to our town, and after it would go farther. From our town, people would smuggle fabrics like scarves, shirts, skirts, all kinds of things. So we had about 50 villages from the Russian border,
mm-hmm.
from Russia, which would come, cross the river, the Zbruch, and do business with us. But after World War I, when the communist Russia took over, they were against it. So we were cut off. We had no background.
Yeah.
We had a few villages, but those villages, they would, instead of coming to us to sell their produce and buy things, they would go to Borshu. Why? Because in Borshu they had the court and all kinds of offices, and they would not be interested in our town.
Did the Jews in your town experience any anti-Semitism prior to the war?
Oh, yes, of course. But it was a hidden anti-Semitism. Why? Because we had the majority of Ukrainians. But the Polish people ruled. In other words, Poland would send her employees, and they needed our support, for example, when there were elections,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things.
When did you leave Poland?
I left Poland in 1933 anyways, and I don't remember the date. The first days about, or I would say November, no, it was not, it was September 10, because I remember I arrived there September 16, it was on a Friday.
Did your family also go, or did you go alone to
Italy?
I
went alone.
You went alone. When you arrived in Italy in 1933, what was it like to live in a fascist country?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. In what way?
In what way? For example, they would not control you, whether you worked, whether you did not work. Practically, I went there to study medicine because Mussolini said, whoever wants to come to study from abroad, no, we did not pay a penny.
Mm-hmm.
Tuition was gratis.
You weren't, I'm sorry.
We had all privileges. For example, only 50% we paid for going to a movie, and so on and so on. And when I came after a month, a man came from the university and he advised me to register. They had a, how would you say, an organization for students from abroad who belonged to the fascist organization. Mm-hmm. Of course, I refused. I said I came to study, and I don't have time, and I cannot afford to belong to any party. Incidentally, I did not register for medicine because I went with very little money, mm-hmm. and medicine you have to attend university. While, for example, a student of philosophy or literature, you didn't even have to go there to attend.
Mm-hmm. Now, where was this in Italy?
In Rome.
In Rome. Were you treated any differently as a Jew?
Yeah, better.
Better. In what way?
In what way? Because I was a foreigner. And Italy, her industry was tourism, mm-hmm. from other countries. For example, I came on a Friday. I didn't sleep for several days. And I had to go to sleep. I had to provide a place. So they told me there's a Casa Tedesca, which means a house of the German people. German students, mm-hmm. and tourists and boys and scouts. They gave me the address and I didn't know a word. So the lady, a Jewish lady, she gave me the address, and I took a bus. It was not the right bus, but the man the man who sold the tickets, the mm-hmm. ticket man, he did not even make me pay. And he showed me to go to another bus. Mm-hmm. And from that bus, and I showed this, and there was an officer, you know, in the bus. Yeah. He talked German, I talked a little German, and he said, come, I will show you where it is. And he went to bring me into that mm-hmm. place. And such cases I had several times. And I asked, for example, for a letterbox, mailbox. Instead of telling me how to go, he would go to me and bring me there to the
point.
This is what I mean.
When you were in school in Italy, did the teachers praise Mussolini?
Well, I tell you, I registered not right away, not in 1933. I registered there in 1935. I started in the rabbinical college. Mm-hmm. The rabbinical college was something else. There, practically, we had not anti-Semitism, but we had the boys, the students who were from other countries, mm-hmm. especially from Poland, we had hatred. The Italian Jewish students who studied with us, they did not like us. They would sit on other benches.
Really?
And this is understandable, because they said, why did those people come to study? What do they want here? They are bringing anti-Semitism to Italy. Or tomorrow, when they are through, they will be competitors. Mm-hmm. And we had same coolness from our professors. There was, for example, a professor, a great scholar, one of the greatest, Cassuto, Umberto Cassuto, a great scholar. As I said, he wrote books both in Italian and in Hebrew. He died in Israel. He cordially hated students who were not Italian. Not
cordially
Italian.
Hated them.
Cordially hated them. How did he show his hatred? He just ignored them. We were ignored. I remember a boy told me, we are ignored like unclean people.
How did the other Italians treat you? Not the Italian Jews.
They were wonderful.
No anti-Semitism.
I did not encounter anti-Semitism.
What made you decide to become a rabbi?
Well, after the war, I came back from Italy, and I had a good name, you know?
Uh-huh.
And the president, who was in Switzerland, the president of all the congregations, of all the Jewish congregations. Mm-hmm. His name was Cantoni, Raffaele Cantoni. He knew me from Switzerland. He wrote me a letter once, and he said, I open a new page in your history that you become rabbi in Ancona. He knew I had my, my diploma from mm-hmm. Poland. And in Ancona, they need a rabbi, and the rabbi is coming to Venice. In other words, the rabbi from Ancona would come to Venice, and I would go to Ancona.
Mm-hmm.
I was not the rabbi. I was like assistant rabbi.
Yeah.
They had no rabbi. Anyways, and I said no. I didn't know. I didn't like the rabbinate. I liked my professional Hebrew teacher. A few weeks later, he came on a Friday, and he said to me, Relis, if you don't accept the job at Ancona, you will have a hard life, because we are after a war. As a teacher, you will not be able to make a living. And this I knew. He was right, because they would give me in Italy, at that time, $10 a month. Yes, I would have the children get a soup at noon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the American Jewish soldiers would give all the ingredients,
yeah.
And this would go to the Jewish restaurant, and the restaurant would give every day a portion to the children, the few children who were there. And so I used to get there a bowl of soup and bread and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So I was forced into it. So I accepted the job in Ancona, and there I stayed from October 1946 to July, I believe, 1949. Mm-hmm. Almost 3 years.
So how old were you when you made this decision that you had to go to Ancona?
To Ancona? Tell you right away, it was 1946. 1946, I was born 8, which means, you know math. So it means 48 would be 36 years,
yeah.
I would be.
Yeah. 36, that's right. What did the Italian Jews feel about Hitler in 1933?
In 1933, Mussolini was against Hitler. In fact, when the Jews in Palestine organized a fair in Bari, which is in South Italy, he wanted to go into that pavilion and say, he said at that occasion, where were the Germans when these Jews had a great civilization, a culture? They still were half naked roaming in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it so? This was, I believe, in 1934. Why? Because you can't remember that. Hitler tried to occupy Austria. And the detachment of German Nazis, SS or soldiers, they entered Austria. And in Austria they had Nazis too, and they killed Dollfuss, the president of Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mussolini did not like Hitler to have him as a neighbor. So Mussolini wanted Austria to remain independent. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he right away sent an entire army to the border, to the Austrian border,
mm-hmm.
so that Hitler should know not to occupy Austria. And at that time, the short romance between Mussolini and Hitler was, like, I would say, marred.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was almost a war between them. Which means that at that time, Mussolini was very close to the Jews. But even before, Mussolini asked Hitler not to be so harsh to the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's it. Many Jews who came from Germany and from Austria, some of them were very well settled in Italy. I remember a man came, Brenner was his name. He had a few cameras, Zeiss and Eicher. After 2-3 years, he became very rich. And in every corner you saw Otto Brenner.
Oh. Why do you think Mussolini changed his stand about Hitler and became his ally?
Well, I believe he was thrown into the arms of Hitler. Because, of course, Hitler and Mussolini was a dictator. He was megalomaniac. I don't know whether he was bad, maybe they say he was. He was megalomaniac, he needed glory. In 1945, he embarked on occupying Abyssinia, Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, England had colonies. Why shouldn't Italy have colonies? This is what he thought.
Right.
England made a very dirty joke. When he started to send troops and mules and arms and ammunition to Ethiopia, he had to cross the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
It belonged to England. England would not say a word. When he was already to attack Ethiopia, England said, no, you are not going to do it. We will make sanctions against you. You know what sanctions
mm-hmm.
mean? They would, the nations would not give Italy anything, they would not have to do any business with Italy, and so on and so on. And there was a moment Mussolini would have made an agreement, something just to save faces.
Yeah.
And England said, as long as you have one soldier in Eritrea was a colony close to Ethiopia, we are not going to deal with you. In other words, England wanted to humiliate Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
And this, at the same time, he got everything from Hitler.
Right. So, okay. How do you think the other fascists interpreted Hitler, the other fascists of Italy, not just Mussolini?
I heard always bad things. They always hated the Germans. I can't say that all the fascists were against Hitler, because
mm-hmm.
I was in Rome. After I went to Venice, I did not deal in politics. How could I express an opinion?
Yeah.
I have no opinion. But those people whom I knew, and I had many people, friends in Italy,
mm-hmm.
for example, a man came, he was the lieutenant, and he was a very good friend of mine, and he said to me, woe unto us if we win the war. If we lose the war, people will say, okay, the Italians fought. Some people will say we fought well. Some people will say we were cowards. But it will be ended. We will end with independence.
Mm-hmm.
But if we win the war, we will polish Hitler's boots. This is the way he said to
mm-hmm.
me. And this was not at the end. It was in 1939, before even Hitler entered the war.
Mm-hmm.
You remember, it was Miss Saal, her nephew. You know, he had an auntie who was Jewish, who was a teacher in our school,
mm-hmm.
but he was a Christian.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you were aware of Germans and Austrians coming to Italy between 1933 to 1938.
Yes, ma'am.
How were they treated?
The Jewish people? Well, as I say, before Mussolini embarked on anti-Semitism, on the racial laws, they came, if they had money, they could open a store, they could do business. If they did not have money, they still could go around and sell, do canvassing.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew many of them because I used to eat at the Jewish restaurant at Pinus in Via Campo Marzio. And there they would come, whoever came from Germany, from Italy, not because he wanted to eat kosher, but he wanted the Jewish milieu.
Mm-hmm.
So they would, but even after he became anti-Semitic, one day he made a speech in, I don't remember whether it was in Genoa or in Trieste, And he said, now we will have racial laws and so on, but the world will marvel how humane we will treat the Jews. And the fact is that till Italy entered the war, Jews would come from Austria and from Germany.
Right.
And they would get help. In other words, there was the Hitzim, like here, the joint. It was a French organization with American money.
Yeah.
It was recognized by the government. I know facts, and this you will read in this, in my manuscript. The police, they did their best to help us.
What effect did the anti-Jewish laws of 1938 have on you?
The effect on me?
On you.
Well, at that time, you will see it here, at that time I was a student in Rome, and I had my papers in Rome, but I was in Venice, I did not study.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, once you are registered, you are registered. Even if you are for 100 years, they keep you. I did not pay, but my documents were in Rome, at the university in Rome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When the laws came, and the law said that within 6 months, all Jews, the foreigners, have to leave Italy, unless they want to be arrested and deported and so on and so on. So I ran to Rome from Venice, and I wanted my papers back, and I got them back. The birth certificate, and what was more important to me, my diploma,
mm-hmm.
my, high school diploma. I took all the documents out. They left something, I don't know what they left, probably the translations,
yeah.
Because I said both the translations and the original. 2 weeks later, the law came that whoever was already registered at the universities, Jewish people, Poland, Czechoslovakia, from all other countries, they could stay in the country and continue. And they had to pay half, not the entire rent, or how would you say, tuition,
mm-hmm.
half tuition. This was a savior for me.
Yeah.
So I ran to Rome, I arrived there, and I said, take my documents back, I want to continue. He says, sir, you cannot do that, because this is only for those who were registered, but you are not registered anymore. Here I have to make a parenthesis.
Mm-hmm.
It was in September, October, and you know, at that time, there were thousands of students there at the, you know, big line, and there the Italians, you know, they are slow. And I said to them, I didn't sleep all night. I traveled, you know, from Venice to Rome. You have to travel 10 hours. And I said, boys, I'm a Jew. And I came from Venice, and I have to go fast back. Let me go ahead. Just like by a charm, I was the first.
Oh.
Otherwise, I had to stay there 3 days,
uh-huh.
3-4 days. This is the way they treat it. Well, and I came there. What do I do? But I knew a man who used to teach, a professor, Amadasi, used to teach Arabic. When I knew him, he was still in the office there. So I looked around Amadasi, Professor Amadasi, and I talked to him. And I said, look, he said, well, I will go to see what's what. And he went there to the office, he left all his work, went to the office, it was again on a Friday. I remember all things happened on a
uh-huh.
Friday. And he came back, he says, the situation is very bad. Anyways, leave the documents to me. I will see what I can do. And I stayed there over Shabbos, you know. And Monday I came there, and he took the documents again. He says, well, I have tried hard to help you, but I cannot. I'll try only once more. And he went there. He wasn't illegally. He put him back the documents in their place.
Oh.
And he said, now all you have to do is this is what I did. He also mentioned that if this came out, he would lose his shop and he would go to jail. And he didn't say it so, but... Mm-hmm. And he said, now, he said, you have to go to pay half... half wage, the
tuition.
It's in the bank, Spirito Santo, the Holy Spirit. But he said, I'm taking you. And he took me in that little balina, in that little car, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many miles, because home is not a village. And so that I, to do it faster.
Yeah.
And I paid and I was registered. And I was registered back. Now, what happened? Her brother used to be a secretary at the congregation. I was a teacher there. At that time, probably he was told to ask the ministry, the police in Rome, for a permission for me.
Okay, we're going to continue.
And what happened? When I got my documents back in Rome, I said, well, appetite comes when you eat, by eating.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I start to study? But I was in Venice. I don't remember, probably there are 500 kilometers or maybe miles between Rome and Venice, and I could not commute. But Padua is very close to Venice, only 37 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
You would travel half an hour by train. So I just asked the university from Rome to send my documents to Venice, not to Venice, to Padua. This is what they do in Italy.
Uh-huh.
You don't have limitations. You don't need to be an A student to go to the best universities.
Mm-hmm.
No. But they did not. They had time. Meanwhile, when he made the application for me, the brother,
right,
the answer came. The questura, the police in Venice, called me up. Not they didn't call me, they wrote me to come, they wanted to tell me something. And there is an office for the foreigners, Ufficio Stranieri. And there was a man who was married to a Jewish girl from Germany, parenthetically.
Uh-huh.
He was a good friend of mine. He said to me, well, you have to leave the Italian kingdom within 8 days, and you are not allowed to work here. I said, what should I do? Where should I go? I have nowhere to go because Poland took my citizenship away. Mm-hmm. I was just stateless.
Yeah.
So I said, well, and besides, I say, I'm registered at the university in Rome, and I can show you, here, I said, here, I have the receipts, I paid. He said, well, he said, the receipts are not enough, because everybody accepts money. You have to bring a certificate, or a document, mm-hmm. or both, that you are registered at the university in Rome. Now he says, you still have 6 days, or well, let's put the date, he says, let's pretend that we called you after tomorrow, you know, uh-huh. so you have time to go there. I couldn't go, but I had a good friend. He was a student of medicine. He was from Germany, Marx, his name was Richard Marx. Mm-hmm. His father was Jewish, the mother was Christian, he was a very good Catholic. And he could not study because Italy's, Mussolini said that everybody, all students from all other countries, Jewish people, once registered in Italy, they can stay until they finish their studies, except German Jews. And he, you know, the older, we were very good friends. I introduced, I used to be in Italy, in Rome, in 35 and 36, I would be a guide mm-hmm. in museums and old places. And I introduced him to, made him work for me.
Yeah.
I worked for the cook, you know, mm-hmm. These travel bureaus. And when I always had more than I needed, so he used to make a little money. I wrote to them to him, and I said, you go to Professor Amatasi and tell him the story. He went to Professor Madazzi, to the same Madazzi. What business did I have with Professor Madazzi? Nothing. He was not my relative, my friend, nothing. Mm-hmm. But the man, he just wanted to help me.
To help you. So you really didn't...
So right away, Sunday, I received Express, I received both a document and... A document and a certificate mm-hmm. that I am registered at the university. You know, I left all my documents, all these in the archive. I have it in here in Madison, in the Jewish archive. Uh-huh. If you are interested, all you have to do is to request that.
Yeah.
Because they have to give them back to me if uh-huh. I want. Uh-huh. They can make copies.
Yeah.
But anyways, so that was that. I came back and I showed it to that the man, to the, how would you say?
The registrar?
Yeah. And he said, well, you can stay. And so they had a sojourno. It's just a paper, it's a journal. And that I am allowed to stay in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote again that I am authorized to stay in Italy, but I am not allowed to work. He said, well, work. You can work. You have to make a living, don't you?
Yeah.
We are not going to see what you do. And so I stayed in Venice. I went to the university, and this you will see in this
manuscript.
Book that I'm giving you, how they treated me.
Okay.
And I didn't write lies, and I'm not telling the lies. Mm-hmm. What ties me to Mussolini?
Right.
I mean, what interest would I have to praise Mussolini, but for the sake of truth?
Yeah. So, you did not suffer any ill effects from the...
Yes, I was arrested when Italy entered the war. They arrested me. They kept me in Venice for 2 weeks exactly, 2 weeks in a jail, which was terrible. I never experienced such misery, terrible to it. And from there, they sent me to a concentration camp, which was not a concentration.
When was this?
This was in July 7th. I was arrested June 17 or 18, and July 2nd.
What year?
then in 1940, to main cloth, you know, and policemen and civil cloth.
Yeah, uh-huh.
They accompanied me and somebody, beg your pardon?
Plainclothesmen.
Yeah, yeah. They accompanied me and another one. They carried our baggage.
Mm-hmm.
They provided water for us. They were just friends. They did not treat us.
But from 1938 until 1940, you lived relatively easy with no trouble.
No trouble at all.
Okay,
no trouble.
I'd like to get back to 1939,
yeah.
Poland, when Germany attacked Poland.
Yeah.
Were you able to hear from your family?
I wrote in 1940. I wrote and I to my father, I wanted to go back to Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And he made me understand not to do it. This is what I say. I did everything to be destroyed. And
yeah.
Well,
did you know what conditions they were living under?
My father worked for the Russians, so did my brother-in-law. They did very well.
Mm-hmm.
They were not, my father was never in politics, whereas others who were communists, you know what Russia did? The communists were the first to be deported to Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because Stalin said communists who are not from Russia, they are Trotskyists. You know, he was very much against Trotsky. So he took all the communists, those
right.
who were communists, right away the
But many of those communists survived the war because they were in Siberia.
That's right. That's right. You have, that's right.
Right. Did you continue to hear from your family?
No.
When did you lose contact with them?
In 1940. I wrote a few times, and after I was, you know, advised not to do it. My friend said, don't.
When did you
then came to? Oh, this was in 1937. My father was in Italy a year.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was 37 or 38? 38.
Mm-hmm. So you no longer had any contact with any family members in Poland?
No.
Were you aware that they were deported?
They were not, no, I knew it after the war.
After the war. Okay. What was the attitude of your immediate non-Jewish friends and neighbors?
Where?
After 1938, when the anti-Jewish laws had taken effect. You were treated with decency at the university, you were allowed to continue, but
it's not decency, they were just wonderful, most wonderful.
But your neighbor, and how did your neighbors treat you?
Well, they were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I used to go to buy fish. You know how it is, fish were not rationed. But when bread is rationed and butter and this and this and this and this, you have to wait. And I used to come there to buy fish. I used to eat in the Jewish restaurant, there in the ghetto. The woman would come to me, there were a woman and a man and boys
mm-hmm.
selling.
Mm-hmm.
She would say, go home. We will
mm-hmm.
leave fish for you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, as much as I wanted, I went to cigarettes, so help me God, I swear you. When I stayed in the in the line for cigarettes, because cigarettes were rationed too.
Mm-hmm.
The lady would say, come to keep a secret. I know you need them very badly.
Mm-hmm.
Go home. I will. And when I came back, instead of giving me one package of cigarettes, she would give me two, three packages. Why? Because there is always somebody who does not come, or either he dies or he leaves.
Yeah.
So she would give me more than I had a right to. This is the way the people in Benz. Do I say lies?
Do you think that all the Jews were treated that way, or were you an exception?
Why should I be an exception? No. This is the way Italians are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I know, of course, I am married to an Italian woman. Doesn't mean that I have interest to say lies.
You mentioned that you were arrested in 1940 and then you were interned in a camp. Could you tell me where that camp was?
to kid, no, darling, it was not in a kid. The first time I was in July 2nd, when we arrived, it was July 3rd probably, we were brought to Batipalia, and the train ended. There they took a taxi, the two policemen, mm-hmm. and brought us to Campania. Campania used to be a resort place in peacetime,
mm-hmm.
because it's beautiful. I cannot tell, such beautiful poverty, great poverty. But it was a sort of second or third degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's surrounded by hills, not mountains, so that we could not escape. They put us in a barracks. There were San Bartolomeo and Concezione. I'm telling you, from there to look, it was on hills, to look down. It's the most beautiful thing, to watch a sundown or a sundown.
Yeah.
It was the most beautiful thing you can imagine. The population was very poor, very dirty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we were free. All day we were free.
What did you do all day?
We used to go in the cafeteria and stay there, watch the girls, or give them cover. Not me, eh?
You didn't work. There was no forced
work.
Forced labor.
Are you kidding? There was no work in no places. They had concentration camps. We did not work in concentration.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was the man who took care of he would sweep the barrack, you know, the hall. He would get paid, not by us.
Mm-hmm.
We had a treatment like a prisoner, like a war prisoner.
Yeah.
Not like a war prisoner, sorry, like an Italian soldier.
Okay.
The government would spend for each internee as much as they would spend for an Italian soldier.
There was enough food?
Food, we had more than we needed. Why? Because the poverty was so great there that the population could not buy
mm-hmm.
The produces which they were entitled to. So we had coffee and sugar and chocolate, fruit. Oh. We used to get six liras a day.
They paid you for this?
No, it was like, yes,
uh-huh.
6 liras a day. A good lunch would cost 3 liras.
Mm-hmm.
Fruit was just for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You would get, for example, oil for nothing.
Okay.
Everything.
How long did you stay at this?
I stayed until August 18.
The same year, 1940?
Same year. From July 2nd to August 18. Then a part of those people, great part, were transferred to Ferramonti, which is in Calabria, more to the south.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deserted place. It's where, excuse me the expression, devil says good night.
Mm-hmm.
And there, of course, we were told that there is malaria and all kinds of things. When we arrived there, we saw that was a desert, a real desert. But when we entered the barracks, we saw a great difference.
Mm-hmm.
And this you will read there,
mm-hmm.
I described it. We had a paradise. I wish before I die I still want to see that place.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you stay there?
There I stayed until October 30th. October 30th, that time things weren't so good. It began to rain. We had, would seep through, you know, we would have a little water.
Yeah.
And when it rained, lots of mud. It started to be bad. At that time, Mussolini sent me to take exams in Padua. I was a student of the university,
yeah.
University student.
Right.
So they gave me two policeman, too, plain cloth, to accompany me from Calabria, from Ferramonti, the camp was there, Ferramonti, to Padua, you know, 3 days traveling.
Mm-hmm.
But all the need Mussolini had for policemen, for the army, for, of course, transportation, he had nothing else to do but to set, and I was not the only one, all
yeah.
the students,
mm-hmm.
they were sent to the universities. And I was there a month in Padua, and the professors, they forced me onto the exams. For example, I was not prepared in Latin. I didn't even know the title of the book Professor Marchesi taught. And I said, may I withdraw? No, you have to make the exam. He gave me
uh-huh.
18 over 30, which means like a C.
Yeah.
This is the way they treated us. And when I came back to Ferramonti, some students didn't even come back. Well,
they just left.
Yeah. And I was free too. I was free all the time. But
you decided to come back.
I had to come back.
To Ferramonti.
To Ferramonti. And I came back at the end of December. And after 3 weeks, I received a order, not I, the secretary of the office, to send me back either to Venice or to Padua. It was my choice.
And where did you choose to go?
Venice. And I graduated, this was, as I said, it was it was December the 20th.
1940.
That's right, ma'am.
19.
And there, I stayed in Venice. I used to be there do my teaching. I was Hebrew teacher there. They had a parochial school.
Mm-hmm.
And to the university, I would go very seldom.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, there, you have they call it index, a book where it's written what you pay
mm-hmm.
to your tuition, and the lessons you attended, everything, and the grades you had,
mm-hmm.
everything. There, you have to get the signature of the professor who taught you. I had, for example, I had to make 20 subjects, but for every year, I had to make 4 or 5, something like that. So I had 4 or 5 professors.
Yeah.
And I needed the signature. But there were, I don't know, 40 students, 50 students. And the professor would teach and teach and teach. And after, he didn't have the time to give the signature.
Mm-hmm.
So the custodian, or the bidel, you know, they call him bidello, like the custodian
mm-hmm.
there, he would take those booklets and the professor would give the signature, and after he would redistribute
mm-hmm.
among the students. Of course, he would give something to the dealer, give him a couple of
yeah.
beers.
Yeah.
But they used to make a roll call. Very often, the professor would say, "Relis," and "present," where he wanted to see. I had a friend there, he was killed later in the army. He would answer, "Present." How did the professor know?
Yeah.
There was another thing. As many of the students were at the front, they were called to the army. It was a tacit recommendation not to be so harsh with the students.
Mm-hmm.
So for a student came, he wasn't prepared, he was in the army, he was in Russia, I don't know where he was, he
yeah.
was in Greece or in Africa. He came to the exams,
mm-hmm.
a lieutenant, a captain, or even a sergeant, he had to be left.
Mm-hmm.
And I profited too.
Sure.
Because I was not prepared.
What happened after 1940?
After 1940, 1941 came. And in December 6th, I graduated, not with honor, almost with honor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You graduated the university.
University.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they treated me professor asked me, how can you make a living if you need money? You just tell me.
Mm-hmm. And did you get a job?
I didn't need a job. I had a job in Venice. I was a teacher there.
Mm-hmm.
I kept my job all the time.
And you continued?
I was free.
And you continued to work?
That's right, ma'am.
Uh-huh. And how long did that last?
That lasted until December 5, 1943.
And what happened then?
And at that time, a few days before, the government announced that all the Jews will be interned,
mm-hmm.
and their property sequestered, I don't know what they knew. And the police began to go among the Jews telling, you better take care that you disappear or we will have to arrest you.
Yeah.
It was very easy. Why? Because a Jew from Venice, he went 20 kilometers from Venice, Mestre, and he said that he was bombed or he's afraid to be bombed and he wanted to, so he was a refugee.
Yeah.
But there, no one asked him whether he was Jewish or he was mm-hmm. not Jewish. You don't recognize there between Jews mm-hmm. and non-Jews. There's nothing whatsoever.
So were you arrested?
No. The rabbi, who happened to be blind and deaf, his wife, the director of the Jewish restaurant, and his wife, and a niece, and the niece's boyfriend. We were seven people,
mm-hmm.
and I. We left for Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
and we went to Milan. From Milan, we went to Fermo, not Fermo. No, it's on top of Colma, nothing. Well, we went there in the mountains, you know,
mm-hmm.
and but a few nikilea, you know, and there we began to look for guides. We found a guide. And this was, we arrived on a Friday night, terrible rain, oh, it was terrible. And Saturday we were there all day. Sunday morning the guide came. The guide was not good, he was a swindler. But anyways, we went from to another place, and there he saw from the custom police.
Mm-hmm.
In plain cloth.
Yeah.
He right away disappeared, and there we were arrested by the custom police. The police.
Of Italy.
Of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
We were 4 kilometers from the border, of the Swiss border. And I was not there, it's a long story. I was not there because a lady said to me, you want a guide? Come with me, I will show you a guide. And she took me. She had a small, like a buggy with a hose,
mm-hmm.
hose and buggy. And she took me to a man who was, happened to be, I don't know what, a carpenter or a shoemaker, I don't remember. He said, yes, but I cannot do it today. I can do it tomorrow, after tomorrow. And so we made it up. When I came back, she brought me back on that buggy, a young woman.
Yeah.
And so she says, oh, escape, 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 because I see you people are arrested. She saw it from afar. I said, escape? How could I leave those people? They were all older than I,
mm-hmm.
except that girl and the
and
boy. And I went there, though I was arrested too. Not by that man, by that thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
but by the fascists, about 8 or 10 fascist soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't be afraid, nothing will happen to you, Mussolini is good, this is what they told us. And they took us to their commando. Ah, and there was the marshal, you know. He said, why didn't you go before, a few days before, no one would have said a word. Why didn't you? He cried more than we.
Yeah.
And after the man came back, and the man who arrested them said, they are my people, I have to, they are at my disposal. He says, thank God, it's good, I'm very happy.
Yeah.
And they began to take us from one place to another, you know. Well, how was it?
Where did they take you?
They took us to the custom police.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us blankets, and sheets, and pillows, and we all slept on the floor. Next day, they gave us to eat something. We didn't have too much. And after, they took us to Como. They were so kind, you have no idea how kind they were to us. In Como, well, we arrived there in Como to the police, the Questura, about 12 o'clock. And we were there from 12 to 6 o'clock in the evening. And there too, we saw a man coming in and crying, looking at us and crying. Mm-hmm. He was one of the, well, an employee. At 6 o'clock, a man came, this is the one, he was a pig. That one was a pig. I don't know what he was, but he wasn't playing cloth. Mm-hmm. He was shouting at us, not the police.
Yeah.
And they took us to jail in Como. When we arrived to jail, the I don't know who there, the head there, the rector, said, I cannot take them. We have a place for 160 people, and we are keeping 800. Why? Because there were too many people who were, they escaped from the army.
Yeah.
They were close to the border. They had many people, smugglers and robbers and killers. Mm-hmm. They had enough, cannot take them. So they took us back to the Questura. The Questura has a place all for 7-8 people. If a man is caught drinking, they rest there. It's not the jail.
Mm-hmm.
We were about 35 people in a place for 7 people. We slept one on the other. We did not have a place where to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were for 3 days. Wait a minute, where was this? There was Sunday. This was on a Monday. Monday, we were there until Friday. The only food they gave us was a piece of chocolate like this,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they told us we are giving it from our rations, the policemen.
Is that once a day? Or
once a day. They didn't have themselves.
Yeah.
And Friday, they brought us to another place, not in Como. And it was a place for the custom police. Again, another custom police. We arrived there, and how many people were we there? About 35, 40 people. And a captain came in and with a lieutenant. Ladies and gentlemen, they said, you know you are our guests. We did not arrest you. And we will try to do what we can.
Mm-hmm.
We will give you a few crusts of bread, just that you can eat something. We will lend you things to sleep,
mm-hmm.
blankets, and we do our best. But you have to say nothing that what we did for you. That moment I knew that we were in trouble. Because they were afraid of the Germans.
Yeah.
And at the same moment, the police, the custom police, brought in pasta
mm-hmm.
with cheese.